We are Radio Catskill.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua describes recent summer in the Upper Delaware River in this week's Hooked on Fishing report. Local herbalist and forager Nathaniel Whitmore shares his comments on medicinal plants native to Wayne County. Yamala, herb farmer in Calicoon, greets us from his Saturday morning vendor stand at the Narrowsburg Market. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Former President Donald Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have appeared side by side, the two rallied Trump supporters in Arizona, hours after Kennedy dropped out of the presidential race and endorsed Trump. The rally in Glendale was held amid triple-digit heat, as Nate Engel of member station KJZZ reports.
Doors were scheduled to open at 11 a.m., with programming beginning at 2 and Trump appearing at 4. But long lines were seen outside the arena hours before the venue opened, and the temperature had already reached 100 degrees, on its way to nearly 110. The Glendale Fire Department confirmed that it had responded to more than 100 heat-related patients at the event before Trump had taken the stage. The event was hosted by conservative groups Turning Point PAC and Turning Point Action. Andrew Colvett, a spokesperson for Turning Point Action, said water was being distributed and that the group, quote, did our best, but Secret Service lines take a while to get through. For NPR News, I'm Nate Engel in Phoenix.
Kamala Harris is taking her Democratic campaign for president to the key swing state of Georgia next week. She and running mate Tim Walz are planning a bus tour over 2 days before rallying supporters in Savannah Thursday night. Manslaughter charges have been filed against the former Florida sheriff's deputy who shot and killed a black U.S. Air Force senior airman in May. Adrian Andrews with member station WFSU has more.
Eddie Duran faces up to 30 years in prison if convicted. Assistant State Attorney Gregory Marcil says the state has issued a warrant for Duran's arrest.
Once he is arrested on these charges, then he will make a court appearance and the case will move forward at that time.
Duran was fired from the Okaloosa Sheriff's Office after an internal investigation found he broke agency protocol when he fatally shot 23-year-old Roger Fortson, who was standing in the doorway of his own apartment. The airman was holding a gun pointed downward when Duran shot him. The former deputy says he acted in self-defense as he was responding to Fortson's apartment for a domestic disturbance report, but Fortson was alone at the time. For NPR News, I'm Adrian Andrews.
Overseas, authorities in southern France have opened a terrorism investigation after an explosion outside a synagogue. Here's BBC's Chris Bachman.
This morning's explosion took place in one of the busiest holiday resorts along the French Mediterranean coast. Tens of thousands of holidaymakers are in La Grande Motte this weekend, close to the city of Montpellier. French police tell the BBC a car with a gas canister parked outside a local synagogue exploded, setting the building alight. A police officer was injured by the blast. The French Interior Minister is on his way to the site. Security around synagogues and Jewish schools had been reinforced significantly since the Gaza conflict between Israel and Hamas in October last year.
This is NPR News.
Who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs?
Democrats depart from the high road at the DNC with some creative jabs at the Republican candidate.
That's what mockery does. It kind of shows you that that great and powerful Oz is merely a little man behind a curtain.
Examining the Dems' new lexicon on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua describes recent summer in the Upper Delaware River in this week's Hooked on Fishing report. Local herbalist and forager Nathaniel Whitmore shares his comments on medicinal plants native to Wayne County. Yamala, herb farmer in Calicoon, greets us from his Saturday morning vendor stand at the Narrowsburg Market. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. You will be able to track the path of the moon by using a star cluster and two planets this week. The moon will be close to first the Pleiades, then Jupiter, and lastly Mars on successive nights. Mars, after coming to within one-third of a degree of Jupiter in mid-August, is now nearly 8 degrees off Jupiter's lower left. The Pleiades are nearly three times as far away from Jupiter as Mars is off the gas giant's upper right. The Pleiades will rise just before 11 p.m. this week. Both planets will rise after midnight this week, and all three heavenly bodies will be best viewed in the several hours before dawn. On Monday, the third quarter moon will be near the Pleiades star cluster. The Pleiades lie near the ecliptic, which is the apparent path of the sun among the stars. The moon and planets also follow the ecliptic as they move across the sky. The moon will be about 5.5 degrees above Jupiter on Tuesday. By Wednesday, the moon will be 10 degrees off the left side of Mars. As the moon glides past the objects this week, it will transition from a third quarter moon to a crescent moon. Since the moon is currently in its waning phase, the shadow on the moon will increase from right to left. The moon will drift past the Pleiades, Jupiter, and Mars on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, respectively. Head out in the pre-dawn hours this week to track the motion of the moon across the sky. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Evan Padua, bringing you Hooked on Fishing. The month of August started with low, clear river conditions, giving way to great smallmouth fishing. 3-inch size minnow-style lures and flies are always a go-to for me. A variety of paddle-tail plastics on bright-colored jig heads, 1/16 ounce or 1/8 ounce, seem to work great. For fly rods, standard woolly bugger patterns and crayfish patterns seem to work the best. In the early mornings and late evenings is when you will catch the larger smallmouth bass on surface lures and or poppers. On Friday, August 9th, select areas of the Delaware watershed experienced torrential downpours. This brought the river up from 4,000 CFS on Friday to 49,500 cubic feet per second overnight. This led to a weekend washout, and the river looked like the Willy Wonka Expressway. Amazingly, these high flows rarely affect the fish, and their locations often stay the same. The fish will find a safe place, hunker down, and wait out the flood. Once the water recedes, often you will find the same fish in the same locations. Now that the river has returned to a semi-normal flow, it is fishing well again. It held some turbid color to it for a week or so after the large rain event, but the fish seem to be healthy and hungry. Some trout can be found in the colder water areas north of Hancock, New York. Caddisflies and sulfur flies are the best choice this time of year. Smallmouth bass will remain active, but with the recent cooler nights, typically the afternoon and evening windows will be your best times to bass fish for the remainder of August. Remember, when fishing or recreating on the Delaware River, please wear your life jacket or PFD, personal flotation device. High water river flows are very difficult to manage. For Radio Catskill, Farm and Country, and Hooked on Fishing, this has been Evan Padua, casting off.
Here is local herbalist and forager Nathaniel Whitmore sharing some of his comments on medicinal plants native to Wayne County. Nathaniel Whitmore recently presented his lecture at the Community Center on Conklin Hill Road, hosted by the Damascus Historical Society.
I just learned that there's some local mulberries. I don't know how indigenous they are to this area. There are native mulberries and also, I believe, European and Chinese mulberries, all potentially in the wild. You know the silk mill in Hawley? That was a silk mill. And actually, I guess there was three silk mills in Hawley. And if you go into the cocoon, which is where they raise the caterpillars, in the cocoons, there used to be anyway a bulletin from a nursery in Philadelphia that was promoting the mulberry tree sales for the silk industry. So the silkworms eat mulberry, and that's one reason why in China it's a very important tree. There's five different herbal medicines that come from the tree, and the fruit is used a lot. And it's delicious. These are a little bit tart. And I noticed the black caps, which ripened very quickly recently, were also a little tart, even though they're dark. Because I think as they were starting to ripen, it was raining and cloudy. But once they get some sun, I think they'll sweeten up. This is a delicious fruit. The trees can get quite large. My name's Nathaniel, and my family's history goes back. Both of my father's parents were in the area. Their families were here. We have Whitmore Road, just down the road, Whitmore Road. That's my great-grandfather. And then, actually, it was right outside that house. We ran around just before coming to pick some things. I just figured, you know, some things that are flowering that you've seen maybe in your yard or driving about. And then, of course, every time I try to do a lot of things and get things together, I always leave thinking, what is that thing that I forgot? And I know there's something, but when I got here, I remembered I forgot to bring the American ginseng from Taterbug's collection. So that's actually how I got into herbs. Taterbug Tyler, which that's also, this is the Tyler Hill right here. He used to take me around and we'd find all these ginseng patches. He had been doing it for many years. So we'd go, and if there was berries there, if they were doing good, we'd put the berries in our pocket. And then if we got to a spot where... Sometimes you find it one year, and the next year it's like the deer came and ate it, and it's not there. Or it just, if the habitat seemed good, we put some fruits in there, and we used to go all around. We pick some little ginseng roots. They're only about, they were like usually about 20, upper 20s. You can age ginseng by the scars on the top of the stem. Oh yeah, we tried to plant it at Fort Delaware too. And they'd be little. You see, like down south, they get pretty big. But here, a 30-year root is only about as big as my pinky. Now, a very interesting thing about ginseng is that it actually brings up global trade. And during the early part of our initial exporting, we exported a lot of herbs. Especially what happened is we observed that Native Americans were very good herbalists. They were very healthy people, and they knew, by some accounts, almost all the plants had some kind of use. And especially because they didn't have pharmacies, they were very good at using what was available. So a lot of things, you'll notice there's a lot of snake roots. And of course, snake bite remedies would be very important. And, you know, you want to find one that's handy. So there's like white snake root and all kinds of different snake roots. There was actually a big herbal boom as we were bringing things to, like, the pawpaw seeds. There's so many things were going back and forth between here and Europe. And many of the herbs, many of the wild plants that we would find here were shipped to Europe. And there were certain plants that were very popular, different bitter herbs and things. But ginseng was number one. And that was actually a bulletin. China had sent out a bulletin even way back then looking for ginseng. They had already exhausted the wild supplies. So the hunt was on. And a Jesuit showed it to Iroquois and the description of the plant. And then the ginseng trade started. At its peak, it was the number one export from the United States. And people got greedy, and it was shipped without proper drying and everything, and then the kind of trust in the supply went down. But it actually started up north. Even today, people are maybe more familiar with ginseng coming from the south, but it actually was first discovered in Canada, and it was as they were depleting the supply or forming bad relationships that they kept going further south and discovering more ginseng. One thing to think about is that pre-colonization, the Appalachians is said to be the oldest ecosystem in the world, because the Appalachian Mountains are not big giant mountains like the Himalayas and the Rockies and the Alps, but they were, and then worn down. So the complexity of the ecosystem that was built upon the mountains is hard for us to imagine. But it was a woodland. Now, one thing about your map with the distribution is I believe that back then there would have been a lot more diversity in the ecosystem that would allow for some buffering of extreme cold in winter that would give you pockets of pawpaws further north. Whereas now, if they're more exposed, you're going to have, especially as an understory plant growing by the river, that could have easily been buffered and going way further north maybe than it is now. But at any rate, most of the plants that would be native here are woodland plants, right? So we have the trees, the understory, the spring ephemerals. And then when you're in your yard and garden, a lot of those plants would have been those things that were introduced and then went wild. In some cases, we might still say native, like with echinacea, people call it a native plant. So this is yarrow, and was a very important European medicinal herb. It's named after Achilles. Aquilea is the genus name, and they say Achilles used it to treat the wounds of his warriors. It was used for wounds, for fevers, many, many things. So this is a plant that was probably not native, but was brought here and then planted because it was an important medicinal herb, and now it grows wild. Another one that's similar, by the way, I'll do a quick botany lesson. People get confused between Queen Anne's lace or wild carrot, which is another plant that was introduced as a vegetable and then escaped into the wild, and we call it Queen Anne's lace. Of course, we still know carrots, but a lot of people maybe are not aware that this is a carrot. This is a wild carrot. You eat a lot of taproots are edible on biennials. So biennials have a two-year cycle. So the first year, it's creating a taproot as a storage. And then the second year, it grows the stalk. Yellow goat's beard, it's kind of the tall, a little bit like a tall dandelion. It gets that big puff too. That was a vegetable plant called oyster plant because it's slippery root. Evening primrose, that's a native plant. That was a staple taproot of the Native Americans. So the taproot is for storage purposes, but it's tender that first year. Once it gets to stalk, it starts getting tough, and then it also knows it's going to die. So yarrow is in the aster family. You can see the little tiny flowers, and actually, if you look close, you'll see they're similar to the daisy or the sunflower. And Queen Anne's lace, I picked this one right outside the door. I didn't want to take the center one, but on the way out, you'll see the tall one, and you'll see the umbel getting started. So an umbel is starting from one point and coming out like an umbrella, but the yarrow is not doing that. It's branching. It's not that nice, neat, circular shape like the Queen Anne's lace. And then also you can see some difference in the leaf, especially if it's bigger, you'd see that kind of more triangular shape of the carrots. And interestingly, so remember, this is aster family. The carrot family happens to be one of the very poisonous plant families, giving us plants like poison hemlock and water hemlock and beaver poison. Another very poisonous plant family, and maybe you've heard that tomatoes were believed to be poisonous. Okay? So first of all, tomatoes are not Italian. Tomatoes are from South America. So actually, in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively new addition to the Italian cuisine. And then they say that they were actually imported as ornamentals and believed to be poisonous. A couple things like woody nightshade and horse nettle help to illustrate this, because they have fruits that look very much like tomatoes but are poisonous. And this one is really nasty. It looks kind of like an oak leaf shape. And it's got these spines along here and spines along here. It's dried up, but, you know, the nightshades tend to have the purple flowers. Not only, but they have it also in the leaf. There's often a purple shade. And I grew up on a farm. I was always interested in plants. My sister got me which I would highly recommend, the Peterson's Field Guide. She got me the medicinal herb one, and you know, I'd be flipping through the pictures, and I'd say, oh, I've seen this, and then I'd be walking somewhere, and I'd say, oh, I saw that in the book, you know. I just kind of went back and forth, and just kept getting more and more books, and then I used to go to a lot of, like, the herbal conferences and things like that. I have an email list. Also, I am on social media, but I've recently confirmed both Facebook and Instagram. If you look me up, you're going to find old accounts. But you just have to keep looking. Find a current account. And I do mushroom walks. We have the spring season, and then usually that kind of dries up, and then we wait for summer. So summer's here, and then it's a matter of the weather. But yeah, if you start seeing mushrooms, look me up, because I'll start doing walks. And yeah, I usually go to all different places around. I do private programs.
Local herbalist and forager Nathaniel Whitmore, sharing some of his comments on medicinal plants native to Wayne County. Currently on Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Erie Street in Narrowsburg, the Union hosts one of our community's local farmers and vendors markets. It's a lively venue with baked goods, vegetables, fruits, meats, eggs, flowers, and personal gift products. Recently, I took a moment to speak with a young man who offers locally produced quality items for hair and skin.
Butters get put into the soaps, so the soaps have the same, like, healing properties. You want to give that a smell?
Yeah, let me smell the soap.
That's a citrus blend. So all the soaps are made in small batches, and so every batch we make is a little bit different.
These are all the citrus?
Yeah, those are all the citrus soaps.
Wow. And how long does, like, one bar last you?
They last a while. They definitely lather well. I can't say exactly how long.
Yeah, but probably
as
weeks,
long as any other soap.
As much
would
as
last.
You use it, I guess.
Yeah. I'm Azim Bey. I'm here with Yemaya Naturals, my wife and I's skincare company. We grow a lot of herbs that we infuse into the products. So we have all natural moisturizer, a body butter, as well as a body oil. Great in your hair, your scalp, your skin. And the oils and the butters we add into our soaps, so the soaps share the same medicinal healing properties as well. We've This is our second year doing it. We have some land near Calicoon that we're starting our farm. The farm's called More Acres. That's about what we have so far. We plan to have a lot more products in the future, too.
You're new, but tell me about the herbs that you have and how long you've been growing them.
So the herbs, they're sage, lemon balm, lemongrass, bergamot, rue, oregano, thyme, rosemary. I might be forgetting one or two. At the moment, we grow them at our garden near Hurleyville, but we just got our land near Calicoon last year, so that's where we're transitioning to. And I've been farming over 10 years, so...
Where were you farming before you came here?
So I started Apple Pond Farm, with Dick Rising, I know, through Radio Catskill. He's a, a longtime member. Other farms in the area, Sprouting Dreams Farm, he's another vendor here. I've never worked at Will-O-Wisp, but I've helped volunteer there, so I've helped out at a lot of farms in the area.
I have to say, I know those farms and farmers. You have been inspired by the great of our area. So lots of blessings to you to continue with your herbs. Now, the land that you got in Calicoon, that's traditionally a farming area. What type of farm was that land?
It hadn't been farmed before. There was just a field on it. So we're turning it into our farm now. It's pretty rocky ground, so that's been one thing. It's kind of a little slow going, but... Yeah, we have about 50 fruit trees planted already, fruit trees, berry bushes, and then we also have a lot of different herbs we're growing, vegetables, all kind of that kind of thing.
Those rocks that you talked about, we call them potatoes, and every farmer will talk about it. Unless you have absolute sandy, loamy soil, you've got rocks, and they're your friends. They make wonderful sculptures once you get them out of the ground.
Absolutely.
And be mindful in the future of the weather transitions here. You have to be aware of the climate changes in this area because the fruit vendors, the fruit growers often suffer.
Right. Well, so we specialize in native fruits, so they're actually very well adapted to this area. We have American persimmons, American plums, pawpaw, if you're familiar with that. So, yeah.
You are going to be a very popular farmer with pawpaw.
Oh, yeah.
This area here is becoming aware of the resurgence. It's a very old fruit for this area, and you'll be busy.
Oh, yeah, we plan to.
What do you know about the pawpaw?
I mean, I've had them. I've eaten them before. I just know, it's an indigenous fruit. It's the largest fruit that at North America. It's a cousin with the chirimoya, the soursop, which is a South American fruit. It's not too shelf stable, so that's why you don't see them in the stores too often. But we plan to do a lot of prepared goods with them to make them more, last more so.
Welcome to our community. You have youth, inspiration, and good energy, so thank you for bringing that to our community. And we look forward to your stand at the farmers markets.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Again, the farm is called More Acres. That's M-O-O-R.
And do you have a website?
We don't have the website for the farm, but we do for our herbal products. That's Yemaya Naturals, YEMALLAH Naturals.com.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, Keith Hubbard, Evan Padua, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Farmer Yamala with Herbal Naturals Hair and Skin Care from Calicoon, and local herbalist and forager Nathaniel Whitmore, who shared comments from a recent lecture on medicinal plants native to Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen on air, stream us live at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, conversations, and NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. Damascus Citizens.